Good morning.
Good morning.
It is so good to see you. Emergence class, welcome online as you're retreating today. Visitors, we're so glad you're here. This week I began learning how important contentment is. If people had contentment, Israel and Gaza would not be at war. If more of us in Virginia Mennonite Conference had contentment, more pacifists would be at peace. If you and I learned the secret of contentment, our health, our relationships, and our joy would all increase. That's how much contentment matters. Think about your experiences of this past week and of this season that we're in right now. How might contentment adjust those circumstances in your life? Because what Paul is saying is that contentment in all of these experiences is possible. God, we invite you to let that soak in. Let's back up a minute and define contentment. My definition so far is that contentment in Jesus' way means being present, being surrendered, and faith amid problems. So let's start with what I mean by present. Escaping and avoiding a problem is different than contentment. Being present means we admit the reality that we dislike, the numbers on the test, the strong thoughts and emotions. The problems that we face today are real, complex, and heavy. And being present to our problems alerts us to the presence of God. The second step is surrendered. Some of you have heard me share before about George Mueller's insights on surrender. Mueller taught that if you have a difficult decision before you, let's say you have two bad options or two good options, surrendered means that you get your heart and your mind to a place where you are content with either option. And once that happens, God makes the decision clear. So contentment helps us to make better decisions. The last part of our contentment definition is faith. If faith isn't required, it's not contentment. It may be complacency. We may be giving up or overwhelmed or not care anymore. But when we have faith, we know, remember, and believe who we are. Loved. We remember who God is. Wise and powerful, our Savior. And therefore, we know what our role is. Follow Jesus. Without faith, our egos say, it's my job to fix this problem. We say, I know what to do. I know the solution. And faith says, I will trust what we sang about, that Jesus is my shepherd, and he will lead me even through the valley of the shadow of death. Complacency says, stay in our comfortable homes and lives while others are aching. I'm preaching to myself here too. See, contentment gets us into the posture where we humbly join into what God is already doing because there's work to be done. And contentment changes how we go about that work. Faith is, Jesus is trustworthy and I will follow. That's what we say. It reminds me of the third Lord of the Rings movie, where the people are being just demolished in battle. The king has sent out his very own people knowing they're gonna be killed. And the king is sitting there on his throne, messily eating these grapes. They're just going all over him. He knows luxury. He doesn't know contentment. Paul is saying that having too little and having too much are both problems. Having too much can make us selfish and distract us from our purpose and the suffering of others. And many of us may feel like or think, Oh, we don't have too much yet. Maybe when I get here or here, but the measurement keeps changing. And that's a problem in the church because we put off giving generously until someday in the future when we think we'll have enough. Contentment doesn't land on our doorstep in a brown box with a smile on it. There's always more stuff to want, whether we look for money or sex or drugs or anything else to satisfy. Contentment arrives when we want to learn it. When we're done with doing it our way, when we're fed up with the anger and the ache, when we come to the end of our rope, contentment is waiting. So here's two stories to show how I began learning about contentment this summer. And I should say first that the Apostle Paul in our passage says, I have learned to be content in all circumstances. I'm not there yet. I'm more like about here, right? I have learned how to be content in some circumstances, some of the time, right? Which is progress from where I was. And this is how we learn. We learn it in some situations with a family member and then with another family member and then in our work situations and so on. And we move towards contentment. So these two stories, our family took a trip. It was not a vacation. It was supposed to be a vacation. It turned into a trip. And we were excited. We don't go overseas ever, hardly ever. And we were going to Mexico. And this was the trip where my kids started telling me that I'm extra. And I thought, this is great. They finally see how hard I work. They know how much I care for them. And you're laughing because some of you know that this is not what extra means, right? Extra means over the top. Extra means you're doing way more than needs to be done. So I'll give you an example. I would show you the exact thing, but I changed it. On my lock screen, I don't speak much Spanish, un poquito, like uno, dos, right, just a little bit. On my lock screen, I put like common sayings and words so that I could communicate with people. And we're in Mexico. And I also made another lock screen that said phrases for my son's food allergies so that I could communicate with people and he could get the food he needed. And it had sentences about Kate being vegetarian so that I could easily communicate with people. You see where this is going. Well, we're at a restaurant. And it was one of our last nights, and most of us were frustrated at the dinner table, and we're hungry, because this was the primary stress of the trip, was that teenagers like to eat, and we had a lot of difficulty finding food that they could safely eat. So we're at the dinner table, and our waiter was so sweet, and so patient, and so kind, and I'm working so hard. I really want this meal to work, and I'm working really hard trying to communicate to him about what we need so our kids can eat. And the harder I try, extra, the harder I try, the worse it gets. The more overwhelmed our waiter gets, the more confused he gets, and the worse this goes. And their food comes out, and it was wrong. And that planted some seeds in me about contentment. I began to realize that when I do extra, I make things worse. Next story. We decided to come back home a few days early from Mexico. It was that bad. And that meant that we flew through Newark, New Jersey. Maybe every airport does this, but at least in Newark, they do this annoying thing where when you land, they send you on this long walk through the airport and actually outside the airport, and you come back in the front door going through check-in and security and all of the things. And so we're going through this maze, you know, of people going through the queue, except we're not really moving that quickly. We're kind of stuck, and there's a lot of people, and we're looking at, you know, how soon our boarding call is, and we're seeing the minutes tick by, and we're not moving, and we're thinking, this is really bad. We want to be in our own beds this evening. You know how it is when you're on a trip and you're eager to be home. And so I'm thinking, well, this is in my wheelhouse. Like, I know what to do. And so I'm asking my family, like, can I do something? I can go talk to somebody who's in charge and see if we can jump line. I can talk with every single person in front of us and just tell them our story and see if they'll let us cut. I can make a scene. Like, can I please do something? And they said, no. No, don't do anything. I was so, I started learning contentment in that moment. Because I let go and did not do anything. And it was hard work. And so what happened then? Well, let me jump ahead. My favorite moment of the whole trip was racing through the airport. After we got through security, I had lots of chances to learn contentment. Some of them worked, some of them didn't, because lots of other things went wrong. But we're racing through the airport. Kate and I have backpacks on. We've all got our suitcases with us, racing down the down escalator, which I don't recommend, but it worked out, but it's not safe, so don't recommend. Made it through and made it to our gate and made it home fine. The difference of contentment is that because we had shortened our trip by a few days, I was home instead of in the airport when I got the phone call that my father passed away. And so contentment meant I now had some new skills in my toolbox to use at a time that was devastating. Contentment matters. Because I'm starting to learn contentment, I am more likely to be gentle now with myself, with others, with God. That changes how I pastor. That changes who I am. Think of the Apostle Paul learning contentment. He's still in prison. Contentment doesn't remove the bad circumstances from happening. He accepts his present realities. He's chained to a guard. He doesn't know if he's going to be released. He doesn't know if he's going to live. He accepts his past realities, that he used to persecute the church and the Jesus that he now loves and would do anything for. Paul's faith made contentment about his reality possible. Or think of Jesus sweating drops of blood in the garden, saying, "Not this cup." And yet, as you will. Jesus' contentment in that suffering empowers our suffering now. And we'll come back to that in 2 weeks as we think about how Jesus strengthens us in contentment. And in the meantime, I invite you to watch with me for where contentment is growing now. And here's some ideas to get us started in our thinking. Last Sunday, Emma and Ron asked the church to sing a prayer around them, surrendering to their need for God, surrendering to their need for this faith community. And as they sat there at the foot of the cross, we got to be present with them in the unknowns, in their decisions, in their suffering and our suffering together. And we got to be present to God. Someone told me later that while we were singing, they felt warmth on their body and they looked up and the sun was streaming in through the windows and landing only on Emma. That doesn't mean God's only with Emma. That means God is with Emma right now in a very special way. This is how contentment grows. After the worship service, two people came up to me, and I could see the tears in their faces and in their eyes. And I could also see that they didn't care who knew that they'd been crying. I believe this is God at work, because our contentment with sharing our brokenness is growing. Similarly, with Joel and Darlene this week when he was hospitalized, they had the surrender and the faith to reach out. God is growing our contentment, and it is valuable. There are many people here and in Gaza and in Israel and elsewhere practicing contentment and working for peace. I think of Joe Friesen and others creating a beautiful statement for the church this past spring, providing a third way option. I think of Harvey Yoder, who, from what I observe, practices contentment and seeks to follow Jesus. If we want to be people of peace, if we want peace in our lives and in our relationships and our world, then keep practicing contentment. Violence doesn't de-escalate violence. When we nurse our grudges with our brothers and sisters in the church, when we demand our own way, we slow down God's peace and reconciliation. Zion, I know we are compassionate, and I know we are generous. Let's add to that contentment. May our contentment overflow in our lives and in this place because of Jesus. Amen.